Hello and welcome to another episode of CISO Tradecraft, the podcast that provides you with the information, knowledge, and wisdom to be a more effective cybersecurity leader. My name is G. Mark Hardy. I'm your host for today, and we got a great episode to talk about security operations centers. I've got a special guest here, Debbie Gordon, who I'm going to introduce in just a moment. Now, for those who are following our show, great, and thank you. We hope this is helping your CISO Tradecraft. If you're new to the show or you just stumbled across us, don't forget to subscribe. You can follow us on LinkedIn. We have over 30,000 followers on LinkedIn. Whoa. And we do a lot more than podcasts. We have great information for you. It's there and it'll help you on your skills with your cybersecurity journey. You're also available on YouTube. Go ahead and you can follow us there. And so go ahead and if you want to talk about Security Operations Center and more information like that, lots of stuff for you today. Now, as a CISO, you've got a number of different elements that are operating within your organization for which you're responsible. And if you take a look at an org chart, do you ever ask yourself the question, what is it that we cannot allow to fail? Now, there's a lot of different roles, but one of the most essential roles that sticks out for me is that of a security operations center, the SOC. For example, if you're a security architect and you miss something in your architectural diagram, chances are someone's going to catch it, and you're going to figure it out, and you're going to be able to fix it, and you'll be okay. And if you missed an audit deadline, well, the world doesn't end. We'll go ahead, we'll get the audit in, maybe a little late, might get a slap on the hand, but you know, the world continues. But what if you chose the wrong security tool? Well, for your cloud security posture management vendor comparison, you're probably still okay. You bought the number two vendor instead of the number one vendor, but it's still gonna work. But if the SOC misses detecting where bad actors just landed inside your network, that's a very different story. And you're probably going to have a bad day. If we know that we want to build and maintain an effective security operations center, where should we start? Number one is you start with your people, and which means you have to have job descriptions that are attractive to incident responders, and then you partner with HR, who typically is going to lead that hiring process. Now, if you want to retain your best people, or for any people for that matter, it's usually a matter of two different things. The first one is your corporate culture. And the second is your team leadership. The first is usually established above your pay grade, but the latter should be completely under your control. And your people can survive in a positive culture bubble within a negative organization, but your life is not going to be pleasant because you're keeping all that stuff off of your folks. But if you do enjoy a positive culture all around, you'll be able to attract and retain great people, which is step one in building and maintaining your business an effective security operations center. Now, once you have your people on board and they're trained, you need to measure their productivity and their performance. One of the things you want to know is, are people producing the value that's required of their role? For example, if you pay somebody $200,000 all in, including benefits, Social Security, Medicare, healthcare, the parking spots, the business cards, the coffee, whatever it happens to be, do your activity-based costing, but figure out what it costs for all in for an employee. Let's say it's $200,000. But if it can create $500,000 worth of value for the organization, that's a sustainable relationship. You keep that person, at least from the perspective of the organization. I mean, why would I get rid of somebody on whom I'm making a significant financial advantage? And so that's one of the metrics that I tell people. If you decide to be an employee for somebody, always ask yourself, am I making the boss more money than I'm getting paid? And if you are, your job is probably secure. When that equation switches, you need to start looking for that person from HR walking down the hallway with a cardboard box. Now, how do we go ahead and make sure that we're able to meet and then justify this type of financial value? You'll want governance. And what that means is you have times periodically when you're going to evaluate your employees, whether it's monthly, quarterly, or annually. I recommend doing it more frequently than annually because a year is a long time to go without providing feedback and saying either, hey, you're doing great, keep up the great work, let's go over and look at your goals for the next 6 months, make sure you got the resources you need, or you could do better looking at the last 6 months. We said we're going to do these things. They didn't quite happen, but you came close. Or maybe it's just one of those things where you might have to agree to disagree and part ways. Wherever it happens to go, what you want to do is have some sort of metrics to which you can hold your people accountable. Let's say, for example, I'll pick a real basic one, that you want to have everyone in your SOC team review 100 tickets a month. It's pretty easy to measure. How many tickets did this person close in your ticketing system during the past 30 days? Now, yes, there's going to be ramp up for a new hire, You don't want them to just open and close things randomly just to go ahead and meet their numbers. You want to ensure that the quality is there. But after a number of months, if they're still not hitting their numbers, if they're perplexed or they don't know how to go ahead and reach closure, they just can't figure things out, maybe they're not in the right role. They may not be a bad person. They might even be a wonderful employee someplace else, but not necessarily where you have them in your SOC team. And that's really what we're trying to focus on this episode, is your SOC, because with your SOC, you care about a couple things. Number one is, how fast can you find things? And then number two is, how many things can you look at? And ultimately, it's going to translate into how many cyber events can you effectively respond to? Which brings us to our final item. How do you keep winning as a SOC? And here we're talking about how many incidents you can avoid entirely and block from your organization. Now, this is an important concept, and it really comes down to the big focus of, do your people have the right skills and the motivation to get the job done? The first one is a matter of training and experience. The second one is a matter of leadership and culture. Bad actors aren't going to go away. All the trends say they're going to get worse. There's going to be more bad actor groups doing more bad things, creating more sensitive data being stolen, and more companies being disrupted than ever before. We've got to develop key skill sets that allow our organization to defend against these masters of the dark arts. We need to go ahead and have people that do things such as read the fine manual, RTFM, right? Make sure they understand the documentation, that they're briefed and they're familiar with their tool sets. Well, that part's great, but that's sort of a necessary but not sufficient condition. That is to say, people need to know what they're doing, but that only goes so far. Gaining proficiency could either be done through educational programs or hands-on, what we call OJT, on-the-job training. The difficulty with OJT is you're only going to see what happens to come in front of you, rather than going through a more formal training program that's going to allow you to see a range of things. Typically, we look at education in the .edu world or certification orgs that are allowing you to provide that education. A lot of people can be book smart, and you'll get that out of the educational program like a university, but they may not gain practical experience with the tool sets because most universities don't go ahead and buy the latest versions of these tools. They don't always have the budget for it. Now, some certifications organizations can, and they do, and as a result, you're going to find out you get a better level of job-related training. And quite honestly, what you want is somebody who can pick the right answer on an OCR test? No. Hey, I got a 94 on my test. Nope, I want somebody who can actually get in there, get on the SIM tool, and make stuff happen. Because certifications essentially are general skill exams. They do provide value. But having worked as a certification trainer for over a decade, I can tell you that for the most part, it's one size fits all. If we have a lab, the lab has the tools in it, and these tools are fixed, class after class, student after student. And as a result, what happens is they're never tuned exactly for your organization or your environment. It's a general education, almost like a liberal arts degree in a way, but what we really want is for our SOC to have people that are the exact skills to do better with the precise tools that we are using, and then create real-world metrics so we can measure just how good they are. Wouldn't that be awesome? Well, this is why I'm excited to bring back our special guest, Debbie Gordon, who's been very patient listening to me doing my monologue here. And she's going to talk about some of the amazing changes in this space. Now, if you remember, we had Debbie on last year in episode number 125. She's a trailblazer in cyber training and helping organizations to build world-class SOCs. So, Debbie, again, welcome to the show. And tell us a little bit about your journey and how you got into training and educating the cyber workforce and kind of what inspired you to start Cloud Range Cyber and to get into this line of work.
Sure. And thanks for having me again, G. Mark. I always enjoy talking with you. So cyber training is so much different than other kinds of technical training. You had mentioned certifications and that they're almost table stakes to be able to get a job and do a job. So when I started my career in the mid-90s, I was in the technical education space then and did a lot with networking certifications. Very different than today. Now, people getting CNEs and MCSEs. If you had a certification back then, you could get a job, you could do a job, and you could probably continue to do that job pretty well. But cyber is so much different because cyber changes every day. And it's not only dynamic because of the threat vectors that are changing and what the bad guys are doing, but the technologies are changing every day. And people have to stay abreast of that. Companies are changing their stack. You know, they're swapping things in and out. They're adding new things. And so people have to stay on top of that, not only to know how one product works, but how they interoperate. So there's more and more innovation. So having a certification doesn't mean you can do a job, and especially doesn't mean you can continue to do a job well. So unlike other types of fields in technology, cyber requires the ability or requires it to be dynamic and persistent training, because what you knew yesterday doesn't mean you're going to know what you need to know tomorrow. And so that is why we developed CloudRange. We knew that whether somebody already has a job in cyber or they have, 10 to 15 years in cyber, or they still are really only as good as their experience. No matter how many years somebody has, they have only seen what they have seen, very simply. Just like a pilot has to train in a flight simulator because they've only experienced what they've experienced. Same thing with cyber. So that's why we developed CloudRange. We knew that people had to gain experience in a very, very safe environment. We use sports as an analogy a lot. And, if you go to flight school, you need a flight simulator. If you play sports, you have to practice. And you're going to use, let's put it this way. There's different types of skills. There's abilities, there's knowledge. And it's one thing to have knowledge and skills. And that's something that a lot of certification preps do for people. But really, to be able to test somebody's abilities requires simulations. So it is safe. You don't want to land a plane in a real airplane the first time you have an engine go out. You want to be able to do it in a flight simulator. And the same goes for cybersecurity. So we have to be able to apply everything we learn, and it changes every day. So we knew there was a huge market opportunity to build a platform that allowed practitioners and soon-to-be cyber practitioners, people who may be in a higher ed program or a workforce development program, to be able to train and utilize all the skills and knowledge that they've learned in other forms of training, in traditional certification prep, and put those to work in an actual practical live environment. So we do that through simulation. And so we have our cyber range is actually a virtualized network representing a company's environment. And most importantly, as you talked about, their tool set. You have to practice in a familiar environment. Again, just like a pilot needs to use a flight simulator that looks and feels like the plane that they're going to be flying, same thing. We create muscle memory. We create situational awareness. And so using a cyber range is becoming a standard in companies. I mean, imagine airlines and flight schools weren't using flight simulators, but they exist. That would be stupid. So now organizations who are focused on cybersecurity are seeing this as a standard. It's being adopted globally because, 10, 15 years ago, this didn't exist. So people weren't looking for it, just like you probably weren't looking for an iPhone or a, cell phone of any sort 25 years ago that does all these things. Now that this exists, people are looking for it. Companies are adopting it as a standard, and it's becoming a part of their program.
Yeah, and I think as a pilot, getting kind of scary. I got my pilot certificate almost 40 years ago, so I guess I'm showing my age here. But we didn't know any simulator. You figured stuff out. And I had a flight instructor who would always pull back the power and said, okay, land it. Yeah. And after a while, you start thinking of those things. And so what happened then is he was able to go ahead and develop my piloting skills to be able to think of things that were not right down the middle. Because my friends who are professional airline pilots say it's 99% boredom and 1% sheer terror. You are there with that skill set for that 1%. And so we develop our people to ensure that they can handle not only the routine, but those edge conditions and the like. And I think one of the biggest differences that an executive can make is focusing on developing his or her staff. I want to share a couple of quotes on this topic from some famous CEOs. Clients do not come first, employees come first. And if you take care of your employees, they'll take care of the clients. That was Richard Branson. I'm not going to try to do a British accent, okay? It's just not even the Virgin Group. But here's another one. Here's one of my personal heroes, Herb Kelleher, founder of Southwest Airlines. Your people come first. And if you treat them right, they will treat the customers right. So, Debbie, what are your thoughts on this? What comes to mind when these thoughts come out from other CEOs? And is this something we can do more of in cyber?
Yeah, well, as I always say, people are the most important element in any company's security stack. People, process, and technology, obviously that's the three-legged stool. But people are the one element that you have the most control over. They're going to stick with you. They're going to adapt to changes. And they're an investment that you've made. And a lot of organizations hire people, and just like having software that's sitting on the shelf or untuned, People have to stay tuned, and they certainly don't want to sit on the shelf. And so you have to have loyalty to employees also. So there's been a lot more focus on people over the last several years. I mean, I remember, you know, a big RSA conference 5-6 years ago, the topic was, or the theme of it was, the human element. And that was almost unheard of in cybersecurity, because there's so many leaders that think that technology solves all problems. And then there's other security leaders that think that compliance is all they need to do and they're good to go. But the really effective security leaders, that they know that people, process, and technology all need to work together, and that people are an integral part of the security program, and they have to continue to invest in them. And especially with the talent shortage, you know, there's so much movement in the industry. People can hop from one job to the other. So retention is almost as much of a focus, if not more, than how to hire great people, because the unicorns don't exist. So organizations know that they have to grow their own. We give them a lot of tools to be able to do that, assessments, training, simulation, to be able to accelerate somebody's time to value. But they also have to be aware of the fact that that person doesn't want to do that job forever. I mean, there's burnout as a SOC analyst. There's alert fatigue. And good leaders will have a plan, and they will help develop their employees. Obviously, you know, a lot of CISOs didn't sign up to do that. When they saw it, I said, I want to be a CISO. You know, how many people thought, well, I'm going to have to develop learning plans and career paths for my employees, but it's part of leadership. So we've had the pleasure of working with a lot of customers where we provide them the resources and make it really easy for them to be able to do that. And then they can focus on what they do best.
And I think you've raised an important part there, is that for CISOs or for anybody in a leadership position, there's part of your job description that's very, very rarely written down. I used to tell this to my military officers. Develop your people. Don't protect them. Don't look out for them, et cetera. You're developing them. And that's what differentiates you as a leader from a manager. Manager will be able to execute on time, on budget, and get the paperwork done and ensure that the numbers look good and that you probably get your bonuses or awards or et cetera. But that doesn't necessarily mean that your people have progressed. And as you had said, SOC analysts, it's a tough job. You don't want to stay the same place. So not only do you want to provide a career progression, but ensure that as a CISO or as a security leader that you're personally involved in setting out plans and directions for people's careers. Because that's one of the things that I have found valuable and rewarding in my life and my career, is being able to have a positive impact on others. And you've chosen that for your company, to be able to do training and essentially mentoring other people. What is it that drew you to that, and what makes that attractive?
Well, I feel like I've always had a natural inclination toward that. My formal degree several decades ago was in human and organizational development. Never in a million years did I think that would intersect with cybersecurity. But I will tell you, the most important part and the weakest link in the chain in cyber defense is the interaction of people, the soft skills, the creativity, the communication, the collaboration. No matter what somebody's technical skills are, if they don't have that, it is not going to be an effective team. So that's a part that I have been most fascinated by, beyond the core business of what we do and our technology, but really seeing the impact of how people work together really proves that the soft skills are so important. And it's now up to leadership to help develop those also. And soft skills can be developed. So you might not be born with them, but definitely can be developed. And it's amazing to watch people come out of their shells. There's a lot of people in cyber who, you know, maybe some more reserved, may not, you know, be as vocal during an incident. And a lot of it has to do with confidence, honestly. We've seen some people who go through a simulation exercise and, you know, they don't want to mess anything up. But luckily with Cloud Range, they can mess something up and they're not going to take a company down. But think about it. In real life, something happens and somebody's not 100% sure, they might not take action because they don't want to break something or make it worse. So simulation allows people to mess up if they have to, but it gives them the confidence, because a lot of times they are right. And they said, gosh, I actually do know what I'm doing. Raises their level of confidence. They go back into production and they're that much more active and confident.
And I think that's huge, because as you had indicated, confidence is the difference between action and inaction in a lot of cases. Is that somebody might say, well, I knew there was something there. And we probably all do that with our investment portfolio. Yeah, I knew I should have bought that last month, or I should have sold it last month, or whatever. But to the most of the time, it's that confidence building that really makes things work. And giving people that skill set, the training, becomes valuable because they're much more likely to succeed and be confident in what we're doing. And the thing is that it's not just training that we would do because we feel good about it or as part of our leadership. It's now starting to become a requirement. For example, the New York Department of Financial Services has a cybersecurity regulation that requires the following: provide cybersecurity personnel with cybersecurity updates and training sufficient to address relevant cybersecurity risks, and verify that key cybersecurity personnel take steps to maintain current knowledge of changing cybersecurity threats and countermeasures. So, Debbie, from with that in mind, how should CISOs thinking about meeting this requirement provide their personnel with enough training, particularly in the SOC environment?
Well, if all goes as we hope, it's going to be more than the New York Department of Financial Services that has this type of regulations. Our vision as a company is to make cyber simulation a standard, simulation training and cybersecurity a standard. It shouldn't just be a nice to have. It should be a must have and a need to have. So, it is imperative that organizations have a measurable way to look at what they're doing. It shouldn't be subjective. Oh, we did a tabletop exercise and we're ready. You know, there's a lot of tabletop exercises out there. People go through them. They realize they weren't really prepared, but then there's nothing really actionable after that. And so, you know, having something that is more objective, measurable, documented, that's something that we can provide. And so, you know, I love seeing that regulation come out from New York because it allows us to say, oh, guess what? Here's a report of everything that you've done, submit it, and you're good to go. And it's just good hygiene. Organizations should be doing that regardless of whether they're in financial services or not.
Yeah, that's a good point, because that regulation goes on to say a covered entity may choose to utilize an affiliate or qualified third-party service provider to assist in complying with the requirements set forth. Now, that's something to think about, particularly as you said, it's not just for financial services. If I use a managed security service provider, MSSP, to run my SOC, have I verified that those contractors have taken training each year to keep them up to date with the changing cybersecurity threats? Normally, I just require my own people to take their annual required cyber training. Don't click on that phishing email and call the whatever. But are these regulations changing the way we're thinking about training beyond just the financial? Is this going to have a trickle-down effect? And how is this going to impact us, either as SOC providers with the MSSP, or if we have a SOC, we're going to be told, hey, I know you're a different line of business than finance, but you better do this?
Well, I mean, the whole reason we exist is so that this can be adopted as a standard globally, not just in financial services, but in any industry. Because, with everything changing, organizations have to be able to show that they're prepared. There are way too many stakeholders and things at stake if they're not prepared. And, you know, whether it's the responsibility of the board to push this down to make sure that an organization is doing it, or whether it's regulations, it is just a best practice. So no organization should do something just because they're told to do it. They should do it because it's necessary to do. And so what I'm really pleased to see, and, you know, it's still definitely a work in progress globally, is that security leaders are adopting the mentality of we have to be proactive. I guarantee we're going to see the word proactive a lot more in the industry. It's going to be the theme of things because there's so much reactive, and everyone talks about, oh, we're so busy, we don't have time to be proactive, we're playing whack-a-mole. You hear that all the time. But if you know anything about time management and prioritization, you know, I love to follow the Eisenhower quadrant of urgent versus important. Things that are important but may not be urgent, you have to plan for. And that includes proactive preparation and training. You don't want something to become urgent and important, or else it's too late. So things that are not urgent and important include proactive training. They have to be scheduled. They have to be planned for so that when something does happen, you know you have taken care of it, you planned for it, you've done it, and it's good. It's a strategic priority in a lot of organizations now. So regardless of regulations, organizations are doing it more and more.
And for those who are not familiar with the Eisenhower Quadrant, you might have also heard it with Stephen Covey, where you have urgent and important. If something is urgent and important, it's a crisis. If something's important but not yet urgent, well, that's your planning, things like that. If it is urgent but not important, like the phone ringing or an email going ding, 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 you could potentially defer that. Turn off your email. You can set it up in Outlook. So I've got to hit F9 before I can actually get email. And then if it's not urgent and not important, don't do it.
Yeah. Well, Cuddy ripped it off from Eisenhower, I think. But yeah.
Exactly. Well, it takes a look. I mean, Eisenhower was a very successful general. Plus, he was born in 1890, a little bit earlier than Stephen Covey. But if we think about it then, we've got the ability to say, let's get ahead of the problem. And when we're dealing with cybersecurity incidents, proactive is left to boom before something really breaks. And how well you respond to that is going to reflect in your depth of training, your ability to give your people the confidence in what they're doing and the like. Now, one of the things is that I have found out is that a lot of the popularity in cybersecurity is about how to hack. People want to, I want to be a cybersecurity person. I want to be a gray hat, black hat, whatever. And of course, there's a conference black hat. But beyond that, if we think about it, those aren't necessarily the skill sets that we really need going forward unless you want to go work on the dark side. A lot of college courses, things like that, even when I was a SANS instructor for a number of years, people loved all that. Wow, I can get in there and break stuff. But really, what we should have is a better way to train entry-level SOC analysts, because that's actually going to give you a paycheck and a set of benefits, and you'll have some way to go ahead and earn a living and have a career path. Are you seeing that people are coming out into the industry with saying, hey, I've got a degree, I got a cert, I've got something or other, but most of their skill sets are oriented around, if you will, the cool things rather than the practical? And if so, what can we do about that?
Yeah, so a few things there. So you're right. People watch TV and watch movies and they think, oh, I want to be in cybersecurity. That means I get to be a hacker. And there are over 50 other work roles in cybersecurity, and they use different parts of the brain. So not everyone is innately equipped to be a great hacker or pen tester. And so CloudRange launched an assessment a few years ago called Right Track, and it puts somebody on the right track. It assesses your cognitive ability. So you don't have to know anything about cyber. It assesses how you think. So think pattern recognition, for example. There's, over a dozen different modules to it. And the results are, it puts you in a category and says, okay, you would be a great, security analyst. You would be a great pen tester. You'd be a great forensics examiner. And it maps you on a quadrant. And then with that, it gives you a learning plan with that. And so not everyone is going to be the same. And everyone needs to be set up for success, because think about it. If you go and, somebody just wants to be a hacker and they go to school for it, they take courses, they go get a job, and it kills their brain because their brain's not equipped to do that well, they're not going to be happy. And so we want to make sure people that are getting into cyber are actually in the right seat and have a plan going forward.
And I think that's great, because you're quite accurate. I remember we were talking about Black Hat, and I remember back at Black Hat 2 and the keynote that Marcus Ranham gave, and he was a bit of a rant saying, hey, all you guys, or ladies, it was mostly guys back then, let's face it, was it 98, were focused on breaking things. He said the real elite focus on things that can't be broken, build them. And he almost got booed off the stage. Now, let's fast forward 25 years, and we found out the Marcus was really onto something, is that by being able to protect and defend the organizations, there's a lot more opportunity for, I think, job satisfaction, but also more careers. Because let's face it, a SOC has more positions on it typically than you'll see on a red team. Right. It's great if you can be a pen tester, but you're not going to have 20, 30 people on a large organization all trying to break stuff, but you can certainly have a large number of people trying to protect things. Yes. Now, let's say we're recruiting. We want to go ahead and bring in some new folks. It's getting close to graduation time right now, and we have people who may have a high aptitude based upon, for example, the tests that you have to learn cybersecurity and work in a SOC. Are there any types of frameworks you should be teaching these students that'll help map real-world attacks that we observe in the workplace to something that they can go ahead and think about and organize their thinking.
Sure. So when CloudRange works with any of our large enterprise customers or governments, and even our higher ed customers who are using our platform in their curriculum, all of the live fire simulations that CloudRange does, and the individual lab exercises, which is called Flex Labs, all of those are mapped to both the NIST NICE framework for cybersecurity education, and then also the live fire attacks are mapped to the MITRE ATT&CK framework, as well as the MITRE ATT&CK framework for ICS in environments when we're doing OT and industrial control systems. And so it helps the individuals know that this is what I have to do, this is what has been prescribed, but it also, and equally important, if not more, is it helps the organization know that they are training on the right things. So, you know, a SOC manager may say, okay, these are the knowledge, skills, and abilities codes that our SOC analysts and our company need. And then we will provide that prescription, basically, of a combination of lab exercises and live fire simulations that map to those KSAs. And now they are TKSs. I think that everything just got changed officially by NIST. But they're able to visually see what that delta is. You know, GMARC, if you have 100 KSAs in your job description and you've met 60 of them, well, that 40 that you haven't met, that's a vulnerability. People don't think about vulnerabilities in terms of skills that somebody needs but does not have. And so we're able to look at what that vulnerability is across a team. And that's pretty powerful, because then an organization can see, okay, what skills do we need? It's kind of like Moneyball also. You may not need all those skills, but if somebody else has those skills, maybe there's some mix and match, mixing and matching going on. And then it also helps our customers, CISOs and SOC managers, justify budget, because if they show to, you know, we're using frameworks to which they are already subscribing, and it shows where the gaps are. So it helps a lot.
And it's really like being a coach of a sports team in a way. If you know that you got a weakness here, you use it, somebody else to plug that gap. You're not going to overload one side and leave a vulnerability there where you're open to it. So that type of balanced approach makes sense. And because you've got a way to evaluate people and they can continue to evaluate it, it's not a one and done.
No.
And so that's one of the things we find out in cybersecurity. It's unlike some other careers where you'll gain the bulk of your knowledge at some training program, whether it's through trade school or a university. And then for the most part, you just kind of stay up to date. We're back to GMARC's law. Half of what you know about security will be obsolete in 18 months. And being able to train and retrain and then evaluate your people's level of proficiency allows a SOC manager all the way up to a CISO to know, do they have any weaknesses on your team, that gaps that need to be filled, or additional training or expertise or practice that people could get? Because you had pointed out earlier, you can't crash a plane in a simulator. Nothing breaks. You just, like an Etch-a-Sketch, you take it, you shake it, and you start all over again. Okay, do it again. The same thing with the CloudRange Cyber. I have to go ahead, and if I totally screwed up a particular threat and it got in and it owned the entire enterprise, okay, let's sit down, let's figure out what went wrong.
5 minute reset, easy.
Yeah, it just reset the clock and off we go. So that works out really well. Now, when you look at things that are out there and we look at people and we look at scenarios, are these pretty much static scenarios that people train on and we say, hey, this is going to be updated once every few years, or is it dynamic? And how do you keep your training scenarios current with the threats that evolve over time?
Yeah, so we're both reactive and proactive. We have a expert, incredible team of people who are constantly monitoring threat intelligence, and they're building actual attack scenarios and scripting them and automating them through our platform so that our customers have new and fresh content to defend against. And so then, yeah, the ones that are in our library get added to. They don't go out of style, but obviously with all the different threat groups that we learn about, we can mimic that. So instead of reading, you know, an alert from CISA that, you know, explains a threat group, for example, Volt Typhoon, we're able to take that information and actually turn it into a simulation so people can actually see what that looks like and then roll it out to all of our customers. So, you know, that one was geared more toward critical infrastructure and military bases. So, you know, not everyone is in that space, but we have so many that we're developing. Sometimes a customer may actually want something that maybe another flavor, like there's so many types of ransomware. So we may add to a new flavor of ransomware to the library, but we're constantly doing that. And we use the MITRE ATT&CK framework to build. So proactively speaking, we use the MITRE ATT&CK framework to take the different combinations of tactics, techniques, and procedures to build out these different scenarios. And then organizations are able to visually, if you can imagine the MITRE ATT&CK framework, they're able to visually see which ones that they have successfully accomplished and defended against. And again, similar to the NICE framework for training, they're able to see where their gaps are and, more importantly, what they need to do to get, you know, to get ahead.
Now, I can see you as becoming a strategic partner for organizations because what you offer on the very front end is an aptitude. Is somebody interested in this? Could they do well? And then you have that initial assignment, the training to get people up to date and make sure that they know what they're doing. And then, as you indicated, you've got custom scenarios that are based upon real-world threat environments so that you know that, hey, for as you had mentioned, this particular incident occurred or some threat actor like Volt Typhoon, hey, let's go ahead and respond to that. But then it would seem that you would continue to sharpen the saw. If we go back to Stephen Covey, this is number 7 principle, the 7 habits of highly effective people. And that would mean that there'd be sort of a recurring process of it. And it seems to me that if it's done right, getting into a cyber range is probably as much fun as it had been in the military for a lot of people to get into an actual weapons range. Hey, wow, we get to go ahead and practice our shooting today as compared to, oh, gee whiz, they're going to make us go ahead and break out the M16s. Now, maybe you felt that way if you had to go there.
You have to do it.
Yeah. Right. People want to do it. And I think that's great. And how do we then incrementally add this to both our training program, our HR program, and our ongoing excellence program so that over time I can demonstrate to management that this type of a relationship has provided a positive return on investment? Do we look at the number of incidents handled and it goes up? Do we look at the number of breaches that goes down? Do we a little bit of all of that? What's the best way to measure the value of something like this so I can build a business case to go to management and say, you know, you listen to the CISA Tradecraft episode, I think we want to do this.
Yeah, so it's all outcomes-based. So it's one thing to say, okay, G-Mark, you got some extra training, check that box, but that's not an outcome, that's an event. And so we look at outcomes as a reduction in time to detect, time to respond, time to recover. All of those things are, you know, culminations of the preparation the companies are doing. So we can look at it as a both a lagging indicator and a leading indicator for those metrics. There are so many other metrics that we use also, but at the end of the day, kind of that North Star is about detection and response.
Right. And so by being able to demonstrate, for example, that we've moved the average time to remediate down several hours, or we've been able to go ahead and demonstrate that using the MITRE ATT&CK framework, looking at the tactics and techniques that we have trained our people and those that are most likely to be used against our enterprise based upon our threat intelligence, because that's one of the best values that I found in MITRE ATT&CK. And now what we have is an approach that is sustainable. It becomes part of what we do going forward. And I believe it's going to probably help retain employees because they're going to say, wow, we could do this cool stuff instead of just kind of sitting around like the Maytag repairman waiting for something to break.
Yeah.
And if you got that feedback from your customers or they found out that being able to participate in this has actually been something that increases their HR stickiness, if you will, so to speak?
Actually, we survey all of our users after every simulation, and I believe there's a 95%, I have to check on it currently, 95% increased job satisfaction as a result. This goes back to people feeling more confident. They also have, in our cyber range, every user has root access to every single thing on the network. So that's unheard of in real life. So they get to play. They get to say, what is this and how does it work? Rather than just being in their silo of being a SOC analyst and looking at alerts all day, they actually can understand, you know, what a firewall administrator is doing. They can crack open servers. They can do whatever they want. And it's going to give them more insight into not only how to do their job better because of what the context is, but even what are some other jobs I might like to do in cybersecurity.
And that's interesting because one of the things that we talked about earlier in the show is that the difference between, hey, here's one of everything, which you might get in a certification program or in a university program that doesn't have a large budget, here's all the free stuff. But rather, here is what is in your environment. And so you're actually going to learn to specialize where you're at.
Yeah.
To a certain extent, if I'm a CISO, I'm thinking, I don't really want to be training my people to leave. I don't want them to say, hey, wow, I just got all this certification in something that we're not using here. And I remember somebody talking about it to manager, hey, I'm getting certified in this, that, the other thing. And they're like, oh, that's great that you're investing in your certification. I'm thinking like, no, that's not what we're using here. By the way, that person has moved on. And so in a way, you start to see these early tells. But here, I think it's a much more efficient, if that's the right word, or effective, or probably a little bit of both, way that we both enhance our training, encourage people to stay within the organization, and then also make sure that were something to go wrong, that these people are up to speed with the types of tools we're using. Because many times, you don't have time to go ahead and break out the manual or do the man pages to try to figure out something when things are moving very, very fast. So looking at that, and as we're getting close to the end of the show here, any thoughts that you'd like to consider for our listeners or our viewers here to think about what they might want to do for next steps? Where would they go if they said, hey, this is fascinating, I want to do more?
Yeah, thank you. So we have, Cloud Range has a lot of flexible programs. You know, back in the old days, a cyber range required that you had a lot of hardware and somebody to build it and manage it. Everything is fully cloud-based now as a service. You can, you know, drop down and choose your technologies, you know, choose your SIM and your firewall and your EDR, et cetera. And it's just very simple. Really no administration required, and choose your scenarios. And so we have different programs where you could have access to all the scenarios to be able to have your team go through it. We have other licenses, one called Range 365, where you have your own cyber range 24/7, 365. A lot of our customers use that for testing also, so as a sandbox. And we, for new customers, we have a program called a single mission, and that enables you to experience what one of these simulations is. So we have your whole, you know, you get 5 to 10 people as a team. We actually schedule a simulation. It's, you know, it's the real deal. And you get to experience what that is and see also the reporting and results that come out of it. And most importantly, and my favorite part, is the response of the users. Those SOC analysts that get to go through that, we get a lot of feedback from them. They love it. And so something that is effective can also be fun. Those things can coexist. And that's what, people love to do it. They don't feel like they have to do it. They get to do it. So I encourage everyone to, talk about it, or, ask us about the single mission. Our website is www.cloudrangecyber.com. And, we'd love to hear how we can help.
Well, that sounds great. And I was just thinking when you're talking about that last stuff, some events I've been to where they have escape rooms, and I'm thinking this sounds more fun than an escape room, because also you're gaining some useful skills in that regard. So, Debbie, this has been awesome. This has been Debbie Gordon from Cloud Range Cyber, and she's been telling us for the last 45 minutes or so all the great things that you can do with your people in your organization with respect to your SOC and your skill sets by giving them hands-on real-world training in a cyber range that is tuned to your environment. And that, to me, sounds like a real win-win, and I think that's awesome. So, Debbie, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to be on the show. For our listeners, thank you for being part of our CISO Tradecraft audience. If you found that this is valuable and you haven't given us a thumbs up before on your favorite podcast channel, please do so. We appreciate that. Those extra votes help us get higher in the ratings, and other people can find out too, so they can improve their cybersecurity tradecraft. So thank you very much for being here. And until next time, this is your host, G. Mark Hardy. Stay safe out there.